this series right now called Faith of Our Fathers or Mothers, whatever you want to call it, and we're talking about different things that, were practiced by the right when people started to follow Jesus, right from the very beginning. What did they practice that caused them to be able to stay close? Because in all of our relationships, it's possible to fade. Even the ones that we care a lot about, life piles on, and you find yourself starting to fade a little bit as a husband or as a wife or as a father, as a friend, someone you work with, and even a relationship with Jesus, we start to fade. So what are the things that people practiced? What type of things did they practice? Spiritual practices is what keeps me close to Jesus. It's the big idea right in your notes, and we put it on there so you don't have to put the underline today. Spiritual practices keep me close to Jesus. Clarice and I have different practices that we do to keep us close. One of them is we almost every week we go on a date. So we go out by ourselves and go to date night, one of the things we practice. I practice in my marriage keeping my word. If I'm going to say something in the small things. When I got married, I knew the big, big things, you know, don't tell lies, keep your word. But the small things, when I was a young husband, I would say, oh, I'll be home at 7, you know, and I'd walk in at 8:30, and I didn't think it was any big deal. But now I've realized as I've gotten older that even those things, I practice keeping my word. Clarice practices patience because I require a lot. And so I practice listening. I practice listening in my relationship with my wife so we can be closer. So I practice listening, and Clarice practices talking. But practices, things that you do in a relationship that cause you to feel closer, that strengthens the relationship. Because listen, just jot in your notes somewhere, when I feel closer to Jesus, I feel stronger. And when I feel stronger, I feel closer to Jesus. Here's how the Bible says it. Christ is the one who gives me the strength I need to do whatever I must do. He's the person. And today we're going to talk about a couple of different practices that you don't, you know, maybe doesn't come right to our mind. We're going to talk about solitude and stillness. And maybe you're thinking, oh, great, what a super interesting topic. I mean, what a flopper, boring church I chose to come to. I mean, what kind of topics are those? But I want to tell you something. All of us are looking for ways to dial the stress down in our life and to be stronger. And the answer comes in my relationship with Jesus. And these are practices that draw me closer to Jesus. The closer I get to Him, the less stress I feel. And the stronger I feel. So the very first one, write in your notes, solitude restores me. Now for some people, when I say solitude, you're like, right on. I mean, alone time, that's exactly what I need. I will take some alone time. No boss, no kids wanting something every 5 minutes. You know, no people that I work with annoying me. I mean, sign me up. I want to be alone. But I'm not talking about isolation. I'm talking about being alone with God. In fact, that's the definition of solitude. Being alone with God, but having quality time with God alone. Spending quality time with God alone. Now, other people are like, well, I could never do that. I'd be way too lonely. I mean, I'm a people person. People's what fills my tank. And besides, I have lots to do. I have bills to pay. There's a mortgage to pay. I have to stay busy, busy, busy. And I could never do that because I'd really be too lonely. And I'm not talking about being by yourself. I'm talking about being with Jesus. It's solitude. Now, when my life is flying apart and there's all kinds of things happening, I'll say to you, I mean, I'm a man of action. I don't think the answer is to get alone with God and do nothing. In fact, when I'm doing nothing, it can almost seem like I'm wasting my time. When I'm not making anything happen. I'm not making a difference. I mean, how is that going to cause anything to get any better in my life? I mean, it doesn't seem like the answer is to be with God and do nothing. But look what the Bible says about it. It's in your notes too. When life is heavy and hard and too hard to take, go off by yourself, enter the silence, bow in prayer, don't ask questions, wait for the hope to appear. Now, most of my life, I've believed it's my responsibility to get the hope to appear. There's something I need to take care of. There's something I need to solve. I need to be proactive. I need to initiate. But there is a place for solitude. It's not a waste of time. This is a story I wanted to read. Charles Adams, the grandson of John Adams and the son of John Quincy Adams, famous people from back in the day, served as a state senator, a U.S. congressman, and an ambassador to Great Britain under Abraham Lincoln. He was also the type of person that kept a daily journal, and he encouraged his children to do the same. Henry, the fourth of his seven children, followed his advice and began journaling at a young age. This is a particular entry that Henry wrote when he was 8 years old, following a day spent with his father. He wrote, "Went fishing with my dad today, the most glorious day of my life." That day was so glorious, in fact, that Henry continued to talk about it for nearly 30 years. It was then that he thought to compare journal entries with his father. He found the journal entry, and on that day, he read what his father had written. "Went fishing with my son, a day wasted." And I don't share that to look down, because I understand this, and maybe you do too. If I'm not filled with energy and action, I'm not making something happen, I'm not working my plan, I'm not bossing people around, I'm not moving towards what's got to happen in life, then I'm wasting my time. You know, I'm offering today a completely different practice that people learned a long time ago about Jesus, that when I can quiet down, I mean, man, think of it, all the emails that have to be answered, and you know, we got to get on Facebook and check with everything, and I've got to make phone calls, and what's on YouTube, and I've got to watch TV, and there's a new movie that's come out, and everybody's following Twitter. I mean, there's thousands of people waiting to see the next tweet about Kim Kardashian's butt. It's big stuff, literally. But if you could remove yourself from all that, the practice is to spend some quality time with God alone. Because that's when He shakes the stress out. That's when I reconnect with my faith. That's when I'm able to understand that, because here's what happens to me. I start off in the morning. I say a quick prayer. "Oh, Jesus, it's going to be great today. Good to be with you. It's going to be awesome." And then I start to go through my life, and the problems start to mount up. And the next thing you know, I'm not thinking at all about God or how He might be with me. I'm thinking about how can I solve these problems, and layer after layer after layer. How many times have you thought this? Listen, how long can I keep this up? How many times can I pull a rabbit out of the hat? How many times can I go to the well? It's just too much. You know, Jesus understood this, and when they saw how He was with God, that's where they got the idea. Look in your notes, and I'll read it to you. "But the news about Jesus spread more and more. Many people came to hear Him and to be healed of their sicknesses." Think about that now. Who in your life always comes to you and they expect you to solve their problems? Mommy, mommy, tie my shoe. It starts there. Yeah. Who at work? Who in your family? What crowd of people? And they're always coming to you. You're always the one at work that everybody could solve the problem. Solve the problem. You didn't even cause the problem. Solve the problem. Can you imagine the load that Jesus must have carried? These crowds of people showing up. "Heal my uncle. He's been blind since he was born. Do it, do it, do it. Make everything better, Jesus." He's a man. Can you imagine the load that you carry? Get the mortgage paid again. Get the car repaired. Make sure the kids are behaving. Please the boss. Look pretty. Lose weight. Get your nails done. Don't forget personal hygiene. It just goes on and on. Jesus understands. And look what He did. Jesus often went away to other places to be alone. Circle that. To be alone so He could pray. There was the answer. And this is Jesus. Jesus understood that He couldn't always take life in stride. And either can I. just about the time. And here's what happens. I mean, I feel like if I can control everything in my life, and I'll just put it out there, I'm somewhat of a major over-the-top control freak. Because I feel like if the bed is made just like I like it and the right food is in the cupboard and all my shoes are lined up exactly how they should be and I'm way ahead on all my bills and everything is good, and then somebody comes and moves the whole thing, the whole damn thing, and I have to start again. And listen, there'll always be surprises. There'll always be unexpected things. Part of the journey is getting hit from things from left field that you can't control. And Jesus lives the same life. Can you imagine? He says, I'm just going to take the day off from ministry today. And he's walking by this small little town, and he sees this procession of people coming out. And I'm sure on the inside he's saying, don't stop, don't stop. They're just going to ask you to do something. And he walks up to it, and he notices they're carrying a casket. And everybody's crying. He's like, how did I bump into a funeral? Have you ever planned your day out? It's going to be your day. And you bump into exactly the thing you would never want to bump into. Or it bumps into you. And now Jesus is in the middle of this funeral, and he starts to ask around, and someone says, this is one of the saddest days ever for our village, because see that lady over there? It's her son that died, and her husband just recently died. Her husband, and all of a sudden Jesus is back in it again, needing to do a miracle for someone. And the reason he could is he would get away alone and spend quality time with God. And his soul would be restored. And he would find the strength. Now I know always the answer, especially, you know, for the A-type personalities, is charge in. I'm challenging you today to stop charging once in a while and quiet your heart before God. Unless, of course, you think you're better than Jesus and more powerful than him, then drive on. But if you're not, maybe think about following the way he followed God, to just stop and admit it. I didn't expect this funeral today, God. And in the story, it says he walked up and he touched the coffin and the boy came back alive. And you know, it never says anything about what Jesus said or did or anything. It's almost like he walked up to it. Okay, I think we got enough, God. He walks up, he says, listen, I don't want you to be dead anymore. He puts his hand on the coffin, the boy comes alive, and the idea is he just keeps walking. Now I get to get a break. Restores my soul. Now look at the next one. Stillness connects me. To be still, which I am the last person in the world should be talking about still. I can't sit still for anything. You see the way I talk up here. They always tell me, you have to stay with a little box when you talk so it'll be on the film right. I can't do it. I can't stand long drives for only one reason. I like to look at the scenery and listen to music like everybody else, but I can't stand in a seatbelt, staying in the seat for more than 90 seconds. I'm always been that way. Maybe you're not. But to be still, our culture does not encourage stillness. We have a go, 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 go culture, not a still culture. And to be still before God, and I'm talking about the inside, do you know how my life would look if you were to see me? You know, like if you're standing on a pond and you're looking at a couple of mallards out there, a couple of ducks, and they're just slowly gliding along the pond. It's so serene and peaceful. They just look so peaceful on the surface. But underneath, their little webbed feet are just... Are you that way? Everybody says about you, they always have it together. Their assignments are on time. Their bills are always paid. They're just doing great. And you know, you're just saying, but inside... You're churning, man. You are giving it everything you have to keep up. You're just going like this inside. And how do you slow that down? Is stillness before the Lord. I got a couple stories for you. One took place a long time before Jesus. It was a holy man named Elijah. And he lived at a time when everybody decided you could worship whatever you wanted to worship. All paths led to the same place. And this was an odd thing because the people of Israel had always worshipped God. And God had said, worship me. You have one God. It's me. And you're my people, and I'll be your God. And then some new people took over the nation, and they said, worship whatever you want. If you make more money or be more happy or it's a better lifestyle, it's your life. Do whatever you want. It was confusing for people because the church leaders told them what to do, and it's always confusing when church leaders tell you to do something. Should I, should I not? And so they start to dabble in all these different types of gods. And remember, those that maybe dabbled in the Bible, God is so serious about it. One time he actually said, I'm a jealous God. He tells the people, he says to them, he says, listen, we're going to be together. And then he's kind of a footnote. He says, and remember, it'd be like if a husband, after you got married, said, listen, I'm going to love you, support you. Everything's going to be good. But remember, I'm a jealous husband. Like, we get around, don't look at my wife type husband. That kind of guy. Jealous. In a good way. Because guys should know. Don't look at my wife. I will kick. You fill in the blank. So that's God. God says. He says, I'm a jealous God. And so everybody just ignores that. And there's this one guy, Elijah, the holy guy. And he tries to stand against all this. No, don't do this. You'll never get back. Don't go that way. And he just gets steamrolled by the religion. Just pounded. So we're going to pick up the story. He runs off. He's trying to hide. He goes in a cave. You know, this is the ultimate day. When's the last time you had one of these days? You're in bed and you just say to yourself, I'm just going to pull the blankets over my head today. I'm not going in. He's having one of those days. One of those. And God shows up and he knows that Elijah has become disconnected. The mission has beat him down. So he calls him out from this cave. This is a real story. He calls him out from this cave. He says, I want you to stand in the mouth of the cave. And all of a sudden, this huge wind starts blowing. Just a gale just starts going by, you know. And Elijah's like, wow, here comes God. He's going to show me he's here. And then he doesn't experience or feel God's presence. And he's like, what the heck? And then an earthquake starts. So the mountain starts exploding and rocks start coming down. He's like, wow. This is powerful. And then he realizes, but I don't feel God. And then a fire sweeps by. I mean, just out of nowhere, just whoosh, lights up. And just like, you know, backdraft. Whoosh, fire goes by. And God, oh, now I'm going to feel you, God. And nothing. Now let's read what did happen. It's in your notes. But the Lord was not in the wind. And after the wind, an earthquake. But the Lord was not in the earthquake. And after the earthquake, a fire, but the Lord was not in the fire. And after the fire, a still small voice. Amongst all the chaos, sometimes it's something still that'll grab my attention. Something small. A lot of you know I have two sons, Kalani and Kupono, but we have a third. And he went off to heaven a couple of weeks, probably 2-3 weeks before he was born. His name was McKenna. So we have three boys, and Kupono, and then McKenna, Kalani. And of course, like everyone, we're looking forward to McKenna, and he's on his way. It's going to be great, and all the ultrasounds are really positive. And we've been through it once before, so the second time you sort of think, oh, we're going to go through this thing. And right before the birth, just a couple of weeks, you go your last ultrasound. And so it's scheduled, and Clarice said, you know, we've been going together. And she'd said, oh, you don't have to go to this last one. I thought, no, we're going to go together. We've been going together. So we go to the ultrasound, and it just, for some reason, it just kept taking longer and longer and longer. We're waiting. They're not calling us. And I started thinking about work and all the stuff I have to do, and I got to get back, and I'm fidgeting and everything. And Clarice can tell, and she said, listen, why don't you go back to work, and I just call you when we're done. You can come pick me up. And I'm like, oh. She said so. So off I went. And I'm in the car, and I'm leaving the parking lot. And just as I'm leaving, I'm just on my way. It's in my rearview mirror. I hear the smallest still voice say, "It would mean a lot to Clarice if you were with her." And I thought, it was so clear. I mean, it cut through everything, so there was no denying it. And that's what a still small voice does. It cut through everything. And I was like, it's odd. And what's so? So I thought, well, I better. So I got parked. I went back up. And just as I walked into the waiting room, I was only there like a couple of seconds. It was, Clarice Gaddis, you know, we went back in. And it was just a few minutes later, you know, that we got the news. And I have thought so many times, what our relationship would have been like if I would have ignored that still small voice, or if I wouldn't have been able to hear it. Because she was going to go through that with me or without me. That was happening. And amongst all that chaos and all that stuff, God was able to speak through to me. And my relationship with him and my wife, in the midst of all that pain, grew so much that day. Because God took the time, but they still, and that's what he's trying to teach the prophet. The prophet's like, wow, he's so angry. God, let's go get him. Bring the power, God. Bring out the big guns. Then we'll experience you. And God's trying to teach him something. He's saying, no. Still and small. And you know, still and small plays anywhere. Big doesn't always. But still and small always will play. There's a verse in the Bible that says it so well. Be still and know that I am God. That's what occurs in the stillness. That's what Clarice and I had that day. And of course, it was overwhelmingly sad and uncontrollable. But in that stillness, I knew I have a God. So is McKenna. So are my other boys. He's with me, and he's going to stay with me. I just knew he's my God. And that's the bottom line in life, being close. Because when I'm close, I'm strong. You can write that in your notes. The closer I am, the stronger I feel. And so I wanted to ask the question today, in the midst of all the chaos, what is it that you need to give God and let him have? And you just haven't been able to do it. Would you consider a moment of solitude? Would you consider a moment of stillness? Maybe you've been trying to get somewhere in your life and there's some things you want to experience with God or talk to God about. You tried all kinds of different things. And let me tell you, you say, well, how do we get there? What does it look like? Here's all it is. It's just sitting before God and listening and letting him have us for a moment. It's practicing that.